Welcome to the Parenting is Heart Work podcast. I'm Dr. Scott Taransky, and I'm here with Elena Svetzlot from the Netherlands, and we just enjoy talking about parenting and giving you ideas and solutions, but we really try to do it from a heart-based approach. I know there's a lot of ideas out there to work with kids, and I like to say there's a lot of good ideas for working with kids, but you got to find good ideas that are best for this child. So not all good ideas are best for every child. So we're going to take a subject that I think is going to be helpful for you today, and we're going to just dialogue about it a bit. So get ready to take some notes and learn some things here. We're going to talk about sibling conflict with kids. So Elena, welcome. I'm glad you're talking with me today.
Hi, Dr. Scott. Yes, very excited to be talking again today, and especially about a topic which I'm sure many parents were hurt their ears at, and that is sibling rivalry. So especially parents who have more than one child, they know that very, very well, and they know the challenging positions they're in sometimes to have to continuously scream and shout, stop, don't do that, stop the fighting. And so I'm sure they will be appreciative for us to be talking about why we think that is happening and what is happening in the hearts of our children, just like you mentioned, and what we could do to change things. So let's start by introducing this a bit more. What do siblings argue, do you think, Dr. Scott?
It's a good question. I think there are a lot of triggers. I try to divide it into three different categories, I think, when we're trying to understand this, because if I can divide it up into these three categories, then I can develop a curriculum for each one. I mean, I think that sibling conflict is a child's first class in relationship training. And so relationships are complex, but you got to be able to deal with the various parts of them. So let's see. I would say one of the big challenges is anger itself. So, you know, kids get frustrated. They get angry with each other. The second one has to do with selfishness. Mm-hmm. Just plain, some kids are just selfish. And that selfishness leads to challenges in their relationships. And then the third one is foolishness. Foolishness is not recognizing the consequences of your actions. It involves things like teasing or tickling or whatever. Not that teasing or tickling are bad. It's just that they have a line. And when you cross the line, then that's when the sparks fly or the kids get angry or crying. And so if I can divide it into those three categories, then I can start forming some how-tos, some solutions that I think will be helpful for a family.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I think all parents have seen all these three play out in our families and during moments where we would rather not. Let's start with the first one. So when we talk about, you mentioned, perhaps maybe we should start with anger, actually, because I think we can perhaps get that out of the way, since it's maybe one of the emotions that children deal with most. Most children deal with that a lot. I mean, all of them. But I find it also in my family can be one of the reasons why it's inflicting so much stress and conflict. This happens usually for, let's say, within one child, or it happens when one child is more quiet, the other ones are not yet angry, and then everybody becomes challenging and difficult, and it's kind of spreading around. How can we stop, first of all, this kind of conflict when that starts with anger? How can we step in, and what can we do as parents to, first of all, stop the incident? And how can we do after that to create some discipline and to create some sort of rules around these kind of situations?
That's good. That's a good question. I look at it this way. Conflict is made of two things. It's made of an emotion, and it's made of a problem or a difference. If it was just a problem or a difference, no emotion, then we wouldn't have conflict. We'd just solve the problem.
Yeah.
Or we'd ignore it, or we'd walk away. But it's the fact that there's some emotion tied to it that turns it into what we call conflict. Yeah. Now we've got a problem because we've got two different things we're working on. One, we're working on the emotion, and the other, we're working on solving a problem. So if we can keep that in mind, then when we see anger, it's usually because some kind of difference or some kind of problem needs to be solved. So let's talk about the emotion first. I do think that God has placed children in families so that they can become more emotionally flexible. Mm-hmm. And so we, as their teachers, as parents, we can come alongside of them and help them work on their emotional challenges. And so I think there are a number of ways that we do that. And we talk about that in other episodes, just having an anger management plan and how to develop that within the lives of children. But let's go to the other side, which is the problem. Because if we recognize there's usually a problem, then we can approach it in a, I think, a strategic way. And see, I think parents, they inherently know that there's a problem. And that's why they step in and they say, okay, what's the problem here? Or they step in and they solve the problem. They get two kids fighting over a toy, say, all right. And we say, Billy, you can have the toy. Or, you know, we come in and we just solve the problem for the child, because we know that if we can get rid of the problem, then we can get rid of the conflict.
Yeah.
And I think that may be a mistake. I think it might be better. You know, although I think sometimes we have to separate kids for a bit so they can settle down. The emotion can subside a bit. Then we can say to them, all right, looks like we have a problem here. You both want to play with the same toy. And we need to solve that problem. In other words, I think leaving kids with the frustration for a bit is a good thing, but teaching them how to work it through. So we're saying, okay, let's put the toy on the table and you guys face each other and talk about it and see if you can do some problem solving here. I don't think our kids know how to solve problems well enough. And if they could learn how to solve problems better, then I think they would have less conflict. They move right into a problem solving mode. And so, you know, the kids look at each other, they know what to do. And so mom says, why don't you start this way, Billy? Say, I have an idea. And he says, well, I have an idea. I should get the toy. And you say, okay, that's an idea. What do you think, Sarah? And Sarah says, no, I think I should get the toy. Say, okay, well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to think of an idea that works for both of you. So Sarah, maybe you should start with, I have an idea. The words I have an idea are really good words for problem solving. Mm. And there's, you know, for those who are a little more adept at problem solving, you know, there's a sequence of problem solving, identifying the problem, analyzing the problem, looking at possible solutions, choosing a solution. And we can go into that, you know, certainly with older children, we can do that. And sometimes children have, you know, they're angry about a problem that isn't related to siblings, and they need some more problem solving strategies because they're having this internal conflict. So, but when it comes to kids, I don't know how deep we need to go in a problem solving sequence, because kids are pretty intuitive. Now, sometimes you get two kids facing each other and one's just becoming really stubborn. And I'm not talking about it until you give me the toy or something. And so at those points, that's when parents step in. So we don't just abandon the kids, say, well, fight it out or work it out. We are watching. And if one kid's being particularly obstinate, we might say, it looks like you're having a heart problem here. I'm going to send you into the other room for a minute. Why don't you go and settle your heart down and get ready to come back and solve this problem? Meanwhile, I'm going to let your sister play or do something. Mm. Maybe not play with a toy, or maybe play with a toy. I don't know. But you're saying to the child who's being obstinate, you go work on your heart. You come back here, and then we'll talk about what's going to happen with this toy. In the meantime, you lose the privilege of being out here, because problem solving is part of what we do in our family. We don't just yell at each other or hit each other, be violent. We're solving problems. So I think if we're looking at this first category of anger, I think that's where we're going to address some of this problem-solving sequence that children can grow in and learn. And when we help them with that, I just think it helps them not only now, but help them for the rest of their lives. Saying, I have a good idea, or I have an idea, is a real good thing to say in life. And we're equipping our children to do that at 3 years old or 5 years old or 10 years old. So, yeah, I think it's a helpful way to address that particular part of the conflict.
Yeah, really, really good advice here. So I think indeed not getting involved in the emotion, it's so tricky and important for parents, because it's probably the part that that's going to dictate how we respond for the rest and how the children will react. So if we can stay out of the emotion and we could keep our calm and just what you mentioned, you know, perhaps send one of them in a break, or maybe send both of them on a break, just to look at, to take emotions out of the situation, and then to start by solving the problem. And I think many times, Dr. Scott, and I know probably you remember, or maybe you don't, but I will remind you that they will probably forget even why they were upset, because they wanted to play with that toy just because the other one was playing with the toy, not because they had any interest specifically in that toy.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I think many parents have been there. So just, I know for myself is a challenge, especially after a hard day of work. or just being busy, not to emotionally get involved. So yeah, it's the same. And I need to, I think this is a perfect bridge to go to foolishness, because, I must say this is one of the areas where my children are mostly, getting, aggravated with each other. And it's not, fighting or arguing with each other, but it's most, doing silly things, just continuously, foolishly playing together. And I just sometimes, because they're not arguing, because they're not, creating any kind of, you know, emotional drama per se, but just that continuous joking and it just, I have such a hard time stopping that. So can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, out of the three different problems, we've got anger, we got selfishness, we got foolishness. I think when we get to foolishness, if we define it this way, we say foolishness is not recognizing the consequences of your current actions. Mm. Or not recognizing when you've crossed the line. Maybe that's even a better way to say it.
Yeah.
When you cross the line, see, I don't think it's bad, teasing or tickling. I don't think it's bad. I just think it crosses a line at some point, and you have to know when to stop. So I don't think many of our children know when to stop. And so when I think we have to set up some structures inside of our family that guides children this way, and we're equipping children again. So I like having a stop rule in a family where any child can say stop. I like to teach this in life experience. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, who was I guess it was my grandson a couple weeks ago I was doing this with, because I think it's just a great way to teach the stop rule. Mm. That you can, I would tickle him and I'd say, I'll stop when you say stop. Mm. And so he's fighting for breath to get, you know, be able to say stop, but eventually says stop and I stop right away. Mm. Because I'm trying to help him see the power of his words. I don't think it's valuable for a dad or a mom when a child says stop to continue tickling. I think we pay attention to what they're saying because we want kids to know the value of their words. And so when we hear a child say stop to another child, we want to step in and make sure that's happening. So we got this, my grandson is 4 and there's a 1.5-year-old granddaughter in the same family. And he's trying to build with the magnetic, those magnetic block things that are squares and different shapes. And he's trying to build a tower. Well, his sister wants to come along and knock it down. And so I'm preparing him. I'm saying to him, I'm helping you build this tower, but you need to know that we need to be ready because I know sometimes you get angry and upset when your sister knocks it down. I'm going to try to protect you from your sister, but you have to know that's part of her fun. She knows that you're building a tower so she can knock it down. And so when you build a tower and let her knock it down, she's so happy. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to teach him one thing that we share by letting her knock it down, and that's okay. But I'm also trying to prepare him from his anger episodes by saying to him, wait a minute, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm, you know, just be ready because your sister's here and I'm trying to protect you. But in the end, look what she's trying to do. So be ready so that you're okay. If she gets upset, we'll just rebuild whatever we have to do. So I'm trying in that case, these are very young children. I'm trying to coach him in particular through a process so that he doesn't get overly frustrated with what's happening. So when it comes to foolishness, I think that we have to help children both see, and now we'll move to older children, yeah, that there's a point at which the, you know, squirting your sister with a squirt gun, who's older than you, she's 9 and you're 6, and you're squirting her with a squirt gun and she doesn't like it anymore. You have to stop, because it's when you continue on, that's when foolishness is taking place. When foolishness takes place, then people get upset. So
yeah.
We then as parents are waiting for those words, the stop words or whatever. And so we are waiting for to hear those words so we can step in and take action. One of the things that you have to realize is that some children, and it's often the younger children that need to learn how to stop. Yeah. Maybe older children do too, but I find that a lot of younger children tease their older siblings.
Yeah.
And then the older sibling finally gets tired of it and smacks the younger one. And then the older one gets in trouble.
Exactly that.
So what I'm trying to do is empower all of them to be able to respond better in situations. So, but I find that when I was playing this game with my grandson, we happened to be jumping on the trampoline together at the same time that we're playing this tickling game. And he would say, stop. And then, you know, he wants to come and attack me again on the trampoline. And we're playing. It's all in fun. We're playing. But I find that the stop rule can be misused sometimes by children. They say stop just so they can get away from whatever's going on. Then they start again. And if that's part of the game, I'm okay, because that's what was part of the game. I'm just trying to teach my grandson to use his words. But some children, you know, will say stop until they other person leaves and they turn around and come after them again. Mm. So, you know, and we, sometimes when we say the stop is means the game's over with some kids or at some point. The whole point in foolishness is to point out to children when they cross the line. We help children a lot in this idea of crossing the line. Let me just advance this a little bit more, because crossing the line is a technique we use in our coaching program for kids who have ADHD, for example, who don't know, they cross the line in rudeness sometimes. They don't know they're being rude, but they interrupt people and they get in their face or whatever. And so we develop a silent signal with them. It says, you know, putting a finger up or something. One dad says he put his whole hand up, his fingers all spread apart. And then the other child takes his hand and kind of away on the other side of the room. He kind of brings his fingers in as if he's receiving that message that he's crossed the line. So that dad can do this coaching with his son, even when he's not right near him, he can say, he's teaching him, you crossed the line. And I think that's part of what we're doing with children who are foolish. We're giving them an understanding of what wisdom is. In order to do that, we have to use some kind of a signal or some way to say you've crossed the line, this needs to stop.
That's really interesting. I actually didn't know about that. And having somebody, having a child with ADHD in my family, I think that's really quite great to be able to use that, because sometimes they're just so honest that it hurts. And I think it's a good idea to have this silent signal where you could communicate with them in a way that's just very secretive almost between the two of you, and then very nice idea, Dr. Scott. I also want to emphasize here that the break applies still in this situation. So, you know, just because it's foolishness, as maybe it's not it's not revolving around very heavy emotions such as anger or selfishness, but, you know, still crossing the line and not listening, being disrespectful, it's still, parents can still consider, you know, putting the children in a break so they can calm down, they can come out of that, you know, phase of maybe too much emotion, too much giggling, too much. That's something that it can also be considered, I suppose.
I would say so. It's important to use the break as a training tool, not as a punishment. If we're doing that, then I think kids are learning to step back. And when you learn how to step back in life, it's a wisdom thing that all of us, when our emotions are getting out of control or we're tempted by our desires to push forward when we shouldn't, you know, all of that is an opportunity for us to put ourselves in a break and step back and say, I need to be a little more wise here.
Yeah, of course, especially because it's a positive emotion, such as making somebody to laugh or making jokes, it doesn't mean that taking to the extreme of crossing the line, it's not becoming then something that's unwanted or negative. Great. So let's go now to selfishness, which I think is probably the most common one of all, even though it probably competes a lot with anger. Especially at a very young stage and young age, when children, like you mentioned, you know, want to play with each other's toys and want to do the same things, want to have the same things. Selfishness, it's also maybe a bit subtle sometimes that we don't really realize that that's what's happening, because maybe we think it can be anger or other reasons. So how do we respond in a different way than in any of these other two? With anger and foolishness, than we spoke. Is there anything else we need to consider, or is it a bit of a similar scenarios?
Well, I think that selfishness is similar in some respects, but I like to provide new ideas for selfishness. I think it reminds me of the story in the Bible, in the Gospel of Mark, where the boys are asking Jesus if they could sit in the best seat. I mean, it just reminds me of sitting in the van, you know, I want to sit in the best seat. And James and John came to Jesus. One of us sit on your right and one on your left when we get into the kingdom? And so I think it's a demonstration of selfishness. And Jesus' answer, I think, is the solution for our children. He says to them, I can't decide who's going to be in those seats. He says, but if you want to be great in my kingdom, learn to be the servant of all. And this idea of servanthood is something that our children need to learn. So I think tattling fits into this idea of selfishness. When a kid comes and says, Billy left the light on in the bathroom again, you know, trying to get somebody in trouble, that's selfishness. And the other kid gets mad at him because he tattled on him. And sometimes I think we say to the person who's tattling, we say, you know, you're right, he did leave the light on in the bathroom. Why don't you be a servant and go turn it off for him? So I think that we're teaching children what servanthood looks like in practical terms. I like what Philippians chapter 2 says. It says, don't do anything out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. I think those are great words that kids can even memorize when it comes to selfishness. We always need to be thinking about other people, not just thinking about ourselves. And so, you know, practicing servanthood, when you say to a child, you need to go clean up the bathroom, and I didn't make this mess. Yeah. Well, it's not about who made the mess. It's about cleaning up. And so I'm asking you to go clean up the bathroom. Well, that's not fair. Well, we're not trying to be fair. That's not our goal here. Our goal is to be servants. And that's something you can practice now. Go and clean up the bathroom. So, yeah, I think all of these three different aspects of sibling rivalry or sibling conflict are great training tools if we break them down and then use them as teaching tools with our kids.
Yeah, thank you so much, Uncle Scott. It's true. I really like this idea of serving. And I think nowadays it's something that it's becomes to be so easily forgotten. And this ego, you know, the ego is so important and so put on a pedestal that we need to indeed remind ourselves also and our children more about that, being each other's servants and not just trying to get each other into trouble. Thank you for your wisdom on this topic. I don't have any specific questions. I know we're going to close soon this episode, and I wanted to just ask if you have any final thoughts you want to share.
Yeah, I think that parents have their own emotional issues. You know, we all do. Kids start fighting and we get upset.
Yeah.
So I would just say that you want to become more tolerant of the tension. I mean, sometimes you have boys that wrestle around, and that's okay. They can wrestle around. You need to just allow the boys to be boys. Other times you see them crossing the line, and instead of just yelling, you want to step in and teach them. Or when kids are angry and fighting with each other, instead of just solving the problem, in your own let your emotions in your own self settle a bit and say, okay, this is a training time. So emotions are contagious. You know, if somebody's angry, you feel angry. And that's not just true in our family. It's true in the grocery store. I mean, you see the manager yelling at an employee, you're going, man, it starts to make you upset. So and just recognize that becoming more self-aware of our own emotions will allow us then to kind of step out of them sometimes and turn the situation into a training experience for our kids without just solving our own internal problem that we're addressing.
Yeah, that's what we wish for all the parents, including myself. So thank you. And we will be all these episodes that we have recorded until now. There's almost 100 now by now coming to on the podcast. So we will have all those available for all parents that want to listen to other topics. We encourage them to do that. And I know there's so much more information on your website, biblicalparenting.org. Dr. Scott, thank you so much for today. And until next time, God bless you.